This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour, Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up in the show today, everybody's favorite, Paul Moyer, will join us at 3 o'clock. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Jeff Baker will join us. Talk a little Seattle Kraken. How about that, hockey fans? For those of you texting in, talk about the Kraken. Talk about the Kraken when nothing was going on before the draft, No coach, no at that time, no GM, no nothing. But talk about them. We're going to talk about him today at 3:30, so you're going to want to tune in for that. And then the professor, John Clayton, will join us at 4 o'clock to talk some NFL, and everything else will be covered, like the Mariners. It was, you know, you and I were just talking during the break, Dave, that last night's game was one of those games I walked away. Usually you have a take. Usually there's something that stands out where you go, well, what about this moment? Or what did you think of this moment? Or I think this moment was crucial. And it was just one of those games where they just got shut down. They got owned by Manaea, who was fantastic, keeping them completely off balance. They couldn't hit. Flexen got off to a great start, and then the Elvis Sandrus at-bat 13 pitches later seemed to change everything. It was just one of those nights where you walked away going, all right, there's really nothing to – there was nothing stellar. There was nothing that caught your eye that you could point to and say, wow, I can't believe this happened, or if that didn't happen, this would have been different. It was just a game where they got dominated.
Well, and then, you know, like Ty France, who went 0 for 4. You know, there's a little graphic that versus the Oakland this year, batting .381, two doubles and three RBIs, and then he goes 0 for. You know, and I was taking meticulous notes and really excited. I like Jack Mayfield.
Yes.
How about that?
Right.
He got a couple hits.
He's moving up your favorites list. Huh?
He turned a nice double play. Yeah, but there was nothing to like there. And you know, it was just on Lou Gehrig night and everybody talking about all that stuff. And that part was really cool and hearing all the different stories and everything. But Manaea, I mean, my gosh, you know, his last outing, 6 hits, 1 earned run, 8 Ks. He just gave up just 4 hits. And it was, I remember watching him a few years ago and he was kind of moving his way up and he's just a really good, overpowering pitcher. So did a great job. But, yeah, I think, you know, you're left kind of musing over, well, is Kelnick going to come back off of his night off? What about the injuries? You know, all of those things that, you know, all of a sudden maybe might set back this plan as far as it, you know, being next year when they possibly make the playoffs. I just don't know how many more injuries they can sustain.
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable how many injuries his team has dealt with through, 57 games so far this season? It's ridiculous. One thing that I say, that I said, you know, nothing really stood out. One thing did stand out. We were just talking about it. Jake Fraley is the oddest player I've seen in that to this point, I mean, he's hardly played. I think he's played fewer than double-digit games. But he's hitting .167. You're going, ugh, it's not good. He's fitting right in with everybody else. He's had 18 at-bats. He's walked 13 times. He's got a .531 on-base percentage. Can't hit, but he's getting on base. It's just that number is crazy to me. The fact that he's got that many walks, 13 in 18 at-bats.
You think it's just a coincidence?
I don't know. He's got a heck of an eye. It'd be nice if he made some solid contact here and there, but he's getting on base. So I guess, you know, sabermetricians probably love it. The analytics people probably love it.
Doesn't have a great arm.
No.
As we've talked about. No. I do like that it was, I think, Sunday where his pants were all ripped up. He's dirty. It looked like his knee was bleeding. He's flying around, you know, sliding into bases, whatnot. But, yeah, and then, you know, we kind of talked a little bit before the show just about the outfield and the arms out there. And I have to say that's one of my favorite baseball plays is, you know, a throw home. I mean, Ichiro's throw to third just maybe my favorite. I mean, even with, you know, Junior scoring and everybody dogpiling and all the things that he's done, I feel like a throw from the outfield is really impressive and it's really fun to watch. And as you've said, Haniger has a plus arm.
He does.
Other than that, and my question was, Jared Kelnick,
was seen as a five-tool player. But I don't really see the arm. You see the speed. Mm-hmm. We will see at some point. I mean, the part about fielding with him, and I know he didn't play last night, but still, just kind of, he's still a big question mark as far as when he comes along. And I feel like the things that he's done in the outfield as far as bobbling the ball, that's just a rookie move.
Right.
That's just something that I don't think it means that he can't field. But I'm curious about the arm. I'm curious because he's thrown it offline a couple of times, and then when he's thrown it offline, it's not necessarily – I mean, if there was a ton of zip on it, I would think, okay, well, he'll get that right, the accuracy part. But I'm not sure if he really has that, or maybe it's just his confidence or lack of.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. We haven't seen a ton of it out there, so it's hard to make, you know, hard and fast conclusions on any of these guys. But I would say to this point, what we've seen just in terms of throws from the outfield, and this includes Haniger, of course, with Kelnick, with Fraley, with Trammell, and Kyle Lewis, I would say you've got one plus arm out there, and that's Haniger. Everybody else is average to below average. Fraley, he's had a couple throws where I'm like, he looks like he's putting everything into it, and you can almost hear the just firing it and from shallow right field, and it lands right around the pitcher's mound, mm-hmm. you know, on one hop. And I'm like, but there's no steam on it. Sometimes they'll one hop it to get it to where they needed to go to a little quicker, and that wasn't really the case. And I think Kyle Lewis has an average arm. I think Fraley's is below. I think Trammell is probably about an average arm. And Kelnick, you know, the few throws we've seen haven't been great. So you don't have a lot of Ichiro types out there. You know, that, I mean, that throw against the A's, the Star Wars throw, I mean, that's a rarity. You know, he's out there in right field and on a line to third base. On a line. I mean, that is an absolute rarity. And by the way, we watch him out there during batting practice. He still has a cannon.
He does.
He still, I would say this in all sincerity, not even a joke, he's got a better arm than every outfielder on that team, maybe with the exception of Haniger at this point.
Think so?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely believe he's got a better arm right now at 73 years old than the other guys outside of Haniger.
Well, and we're watching him out there throwing the ball, and he does long toss and things like that, and it's just so effortless. It's kind of like what we talk about Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
How the ball just kind of flies out of his hands. His hand, that's kind of what you see from Ichiro, who's, by the way, spatted up and has, like, his wristbands on.
He's ready to play.
There.
And he did that when we were watching him the other day. He did something I had never seen before. He was in center field. He's just shagging fly balls during batting practice. And there was one that was not a pop-up, but it was just way up there. You know, he wasn't having to run to get it. It was way up there. So he was just tracking it, looking at it, and at the last second turned his back to it and caught it over his shoulder.
It was a no-look catch?
Yeah. I had never seen that. I've seen over-the-shoulder catches, guys running, and it comes over their head, but they're tracking it. He's just kind of watching this big pop fly, and he's just staring at it, and then turns his back to it to where he's losing contact vision-wise with the ball for a hot second, turns around and catches it in front of him with his back to the hitter. I've never seen that before.
How many times do you think he got either hit in the head or the forearm?
I don't know.
Or it went off the tip of his glove?
That was crazy. And nobody reacted. He just kind of did it, threw the ball back in, and I just happened to be looking at him going, wait, what did he just do? That was nuts.
I'm starting to question as to whether that really happened, Bob.
Yeah.
You're the only one that saw it.
Do you think
your eyes were playing tricks on you?
No. No, I was watching him the whole time, like an eagle.
We got to ask about that because, you know what, that's probably one of those things where those guys are like, oh, yeah, he does that stuff all the time.
I would imagine because nobody reacted. I mean, he was just kind of out there doing his thing. And, you know, I've seen him catch behind his back a lot where he's looking at it, and then he puts the glove behind his back. I've seen him do that many times, but never turning his back to the ball. That was nuts. But
that's having a lot of confidence in your ability to track a fly ball.
Yeah, that was pretty darn impressive. I guess the big news is what we heard from Jerry DePoto with Danny Gallant, that, you know, they were talking to him about Kyle Lewis, who's on the IL with that knee injury, the slight tear in his meniscus. He's getting a second opinion. And the news coming from Jerry is not positive.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help, and you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
That's terrible.
That's brutal.
News. Terrible news.
That's brutal. I mean, he's talking season there. Like, you might see him in the season. I mean, that's another potentially lost season. If we see him, it sounds like it's going to be way down the road. That is absolutely brutal. I feel, first of all, I feel terrible for Kyle Lewis. I mean, you're somebody that's gone through injury after you trained and you busted your butt to get back from injury, and then for it to happen again. And you talked about your reaction after you thought you had the best offseason you ever had, best shape you were in, and boom, you suffer another injury and you're in the shower crying. I mean, I can't even imagine what he's feeling like.
Yeah. Well, and you know the guy that stayed healthy through this whole thing?
Mitch.
Mitch Haniger, man.
So far.
You know, and I think about him all the time. And remember during the offseason, him doing those workouts where he's like on the monkey bars and he's lifting his knees up one way and then the other. And then he was grappling on the ground with a bag, you know, rolling over. I mean, all these really weird movements. And he's able to stay healthy. And yet these guys, what do you think that – let me ask you this, because it was pretty – common occurrence in the NFL as far as getting a second opinion. When's the last time you remember like a Mariner player? Or I know that with the Seahawks, remember there was the one thing where everybody was going over to Europe to get some kind of a blood platelet transfer or something and then you know you just don't hear that much. But I told the story yesterday. I just, you know, the Seahawk doctor at the time, I had a doctor from college. He was a guy I went and saw up in Tahoe. His name was Richard Stedman, and he was one of those guys that, like, I met Monica Seles one time up there. I mean, he was like the, you know, for the big-time athletes, and he was really, really good, and he saved me, man. I mean, some of the stuff that he did as far as repairing my knee instead of just ripping stuff out. And so, yeah, I always went to him. And any time that there was something wrong, and I told the story yesterday that, you know, the words were said that, hey, we don't know what's going on with your knee, so we're going to open it up and take a look at it. I'm like, no, that's not what you're doing. You're not doing that.
Yeah.
So I end up, you know, and I think I paid my own way to go there, to go to Vail, Colorado, and take a few days off. I don't think the team cared for it very much. You know, I don't think they liked it, but like I was like, hey, I'm gonna take care of my knee with my knee doctor that I trust. Yeah. And, you know, so I don't know what that means. I mean, I don't know if it means that they want to do surgery and he doesn't, or, you know, they don't want to do it and he does. I mean,
that would be the shocking part. We talked about this briefly yesterday. The idea of somebody getting a second opinion, to me, usually means the news you got the first time isn't what you want to hear. Is it maybe more extreme than you want it. Maybe he was hoping to hear, hey, we're going to work with this through physical therapy and try to avoid surgery. To me, that tells me you got extreme news or something you weren't prepared for. Let me get a second opinion on that before I agree with this diagnosis.
Well, and I've gone to Calfane before, and you know, and I don't know if he's doing the, you know, stuff for him, and he's told me to not get surgery.
Yeah.
You know, and look, a lot of doctors, I said that this yesterday, you know, if you're a surgeon, it's like, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yeah. Like, yeah, surgery. And, you know, he is very good at not, you know, like, hey, let's see if we can find another way around this. Because, you know, no matter how you look at it, they've got it down to a science, but it's still a risk getting surgery. They're going to knock you out. You know, they're going to cut a hole in your body. So, I mean, that's – but I don't know which way that's going. The only thing I would say that is – my question is this enough bad news to give – Jerry another 6 months or so, or another year? I mean, the injuries that are piling up here, I mean, I feel like it's definitely counterproductive, and it's not where you want to go. You expect a few going in. I remember when we played, I think it was the Tigers, at that point the Mariners had like 13 guys on the IL, and I was looking at their list and it was like 5 or 6.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the normal number. This is a ridiculous number now.
Yeah, I've not kept track of every other team. At one point, we kept hearing they are leading the league. Right. That's one area they were an unfortunate winner right there, as they had more guys on the IL than any other team.
It's nothing to brag about.
Yeah, not. There's no glory in that. I'm not sure if that's still the case. If they're not leading the league, they've got to be in contention. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then we got the news right after we were off the air yesterday that Justin Dunn is going to the IL. Now, they interviewed him during the game yesterday, which I thought was interesting. You know, obviously with being Lou Gehrig Day and all that, he's got some attachments to somebody he was connected with before he became a pro that dealt with this. So there was that conversation going on. But then they asked him about his shoulder, and he really made it sound like, it just didn't really feel right, didn't react right, but like sort of like no big deal. And then Scott Servais asked about it, kind of the same tone.
Yeah, Justin was, out throwing yesterday, felt a little something in the back of it. Didn't think it was going to be that big of an issue. Got out to play catch today and kind of shut himself down. Did not feel right there. I don't think it's going to be anything. I'll keep my fingers crossed. Maybe one of those who just missed his one start. We're able to calm it down because talking to our training staff, the strength is good. Everything like that is not an issue there. So maybe just a little, inflammation in there, and hopefully we can calm it down and he only misses one start, but I'm not sure.
You hope it's one start. He's been doing a nice job. You know, even when he gets himself in trouble, he's been able to really minimize the damage. You look at his numbers, he's really done a nice job keeping the team in the game, regardless of how things may be going with him and his command. But, I mean, just another, you get Marco back, now Dunn goes down. What does this team look like if they're all healthy? How much better are they?
You have Paxton.
Yeah, I mean, if you had Paxton, you never lost Marco, you never lost Kyle Lewis, you never lost any of these. I mean, we can go down the list of everybody that's on the IL. What do they look like if they have a regular number of injuries, whatever that number would be? I don't know, 4 or 5? Could we limit it to that?
Well, and you asked the question, too, what about the wizard at first base, Evan White?
Forgot about him. I don't know what's going on with him. Yeah. I have no idea. I mean, yeah, that's a phenomenal defensive. That level of defense is different than most of the other guys on this team. So that is a big miss. With all due respect to Ty France, he's not close, defensively speaking. He's doing a fine job. He's not hurting you, but Evan White is just a different level of defense there. He can't hit. That's been problematic for him. But you kind of forget about him because it feels like he's been gone forever.
So text it in to 710-710. Is this enough of a concern or enough injuries where you're like, okay, we're going to push the plan out, Jerry's plan out another, whether it's a few months or whatever. And I'm not saying that they're going to continue on this pace, but even if they just kind of level off and have the same number of injuries as everybody else, it's still going to be way more. So I don't know. I mean, you're not getting a chance to see some of the guys that are part of the plan because of it.
Yeah, and maybe you see some of the guys that are part of the plan longer than you should in Kelnick because of your outfield situation with Lewis hurt now. So we'll see how all that, we'll talk about that. But right now, let's take two.
Well, Dan Campbell, the coach who just keeps providing us with tremendous content, he showed up to his presser today wearing a racing helmet. He will be the Grand Marshal at the Detroit Grand Prix on June 12th. He did actually provide some news, though. The Lions have had talks with Todd Gurley and Gurley's agent.
Now, I didn't see the helmet. Was this like a full-faced helmet?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a white helmet that had the little visor that comes down. And I don't know, there was something hanging out of the bottom.
Might have been the chin strap.
Maybe, yeah. And I didn't really hear what he was saying. I think it was muffled in there.
I can't figure out if I think he's just a complete meathead or if he's really got a good sense of humor.
Oh, he's a meathead.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. The thing is, though, when you're a leader, I mean, if you're genuine, and that's just who you are, and you are yourself. And, the term comfortable in your own skin. Guys will follow him, but that remains to be seen. I know a lot of people don't like it. It's like you got to, get some wins under your belt and establish yourself before you start doing these goofball things. But I don't know. We'll see if, see how the players like him.
How would you, as a veteran, as a rookie, you're going to go along with pretty much anybody, right? You're just trying to fit in and find your way onto the roster and get comfortable. So you're probably just going to accept whatever comes from the coach. But if you're a guy in the league for 7 years, 8 years, and this guy comes in, is that a tough sell?
But is he real? Is he a real guy? Like, I know a lot of people, Danny is very corny, and then he makes his jokes because he doesn't, he obviously wants you to not laugh at them, and then he laughs at you not laughing. Danny is real.
Yeah.
He is a very real personality. Like, if Danny was any other way, I would be so disappointed, because he's just a genuine article, right?
Right.
As they say.
And that's the difference. I'm using Danny as an example, comparing him to Dan Campbell. How about that? But I'm telling you,
one guy's a total true meathead in your eyes. The other's a total goofball in your
eyes. But I mean, and that's just Danny's personality, and he wears it, and it's just who he is. So of course, I love him for that, and that's why he's one of the, you know, one of my favorite people. And so it that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to these guys are going to be able, and the veterans, they'll sniff a guy out. If this guy's it's an act and he's phony and he's acting a different way behind the scenes, that act will wear thin very quickly.
Well, it's probably good the Mariners saw the Dodgers without Cody Bellinger. Last night, he had a grand slam and drove in two more runs. So he drove in six runs in the first inning. The Dodgers scored 11 runs in the first inning against the Cardinals, and they went on to win 14-3.
Boy, if you're a Cardinal fan watching that, I mean, do you just turn at that point? Are you just going, all right, game over? 11 in the first? You don't even get a chance to get warm. You don't even get a chance to get your seat, you know, where you want. If you're watching at home, if you whether you're in the stadium, what have you, do you have your refreshments at that point? Do you have your food? Are you just going, all right, well, I guess we're beating traffic tonight. We're out of here.
That's a great question. Can you imagine, you know, you bring your family, or you get everybody seated down, you're the seated, and then you're the dad. You go get all the drinks and everything. Maybe that takes you 10 or 12 minutes, and you come down to your seat, and it's 12-0.
It's unbelievable.
All right, man. Kids, let's go.
Well, this was fun. We'll do it again. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, the 1980s are back. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Paul Moyer will join us on the program. Everybody looks forward to that conversation every week, so stay tuned for that. We talked about the 80s coming back. And we'll touch on this with the professor, John Clayton, but the word is the USFL is back and ready to jump right back in starting in 22, which will be interesting. And we were talking about it with John, you know, just some of the names that have played in the USFL. I don't even really remember it. I mean, I'm familiar with the big names that came from there, but I couldn't tell you about the teams. I know that Herschel played there. I know that Reggie White and Jim Kelly, you know, some other players came out of the USFL, but in terms of, oh, this team was good, this team was bad, I remember the uniforms. I don't recall any of that. Were you dialed into this?
Yeah, a little bit. A couple of the things, there was a team called the Oakland Invaders, and my brother, he's 2 years older than me, and he played D-tackle at Stanford. Really good player. His thing was he couldn't run, and so they went to do, you know, the 40s, and I don't think he ran a good 40, but that was his kind of tryout with the Oakland Invaders. I remember that. They had that helmet with like a fist holding a lightning bolt, I believe, which was kind of cool. They had some kind of cool jerseys and everything. The one thing I remember about it was I was at Stanford and there was this linebacker named Todd Shell who got drafted, I think, by the 49ers. He was a BYU guy. But I remember one of the USFL teams, I can't remember which one, or maybe it was the Invaders, they were going to offer him $400,000. That's what it came out in the paper. That was his salary. And I remember thinking at that time, $400,000? That guy's a linebacker.
Yeah.
I mean, and so they started to, you know, they were paying out a good amount of money. You know, they were attracting a lot of good players away. And if you look at the list of guys from the 80s, I mean, Herschel Walker, Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Reggie White, Gary Zimmerman, who I played with in Denver, is a Hall of Famer, and I'd forgotten that he was part of it. Sam Mills, my favorite, the linebacker from the Saints, that guy's like 5'7", 5'8", tragically passed away a few years ago from, I think, bladder cancer. But, yeah, just a bunch of really good guys. Remember Bobby Hebert?
Oh,
Bobby,
yeah.
Bobby Hebert got a mention on Seinfeld. Remember George Costanza said the H is silent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By the way, he's got the thickest accent if you ever interview Bobby Hebert. Let's see. I mean, he is Louisiana. He is.
I was interviewed by him before we played the Saints. He was doing radio.
Yeah.
And so they were they in a different booth maybe? But I could barely understand him.
It's so thick.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. But Anthony Carter from the Vikings, that receiver. And then there's a legendary guy. Oh, Keith Millard also played here, went to Washington State. He was player of the year for the Minnesota Vikings. But I don't know if you remember a guy named Marcus Dupree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to play against him my sophomore year when I was at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was back in the days where it was like he ran for like 4,000 yards. I'm exaggerating, but like I think his senior year, he was out of a place called Philadelphia, Mississippi. And he, you know, so there was just this legend of this guy. And we played them at Stanford. And, yeah, so, I mean, he was a guy that I can't remember what team, but I know he blew his knee out. But he was supposed to be like, this guy's a, you know, all pro, coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And he ended up, you know, hurting his knee. But, yeah, there was a lot of good players. Like I said, Steve Young started off with the LA Express. So, you know, we'll see if they're able to, you know, if we're talking about this 5-10 years from now.
We'd be talking about it 3 years from now. Yeah. I mean, isn't that really the question? And you guys can text in 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line, when we said bring the 80s back. The 425 says, does that mean I can break out the jean jacket with all the patches, skinny jeans, and go back to humming Rats Round and Round?
if that makes you happy.
Yeah, go for it.
I like the 80s.
Go for it. Yeah. They were good times.
Fond memories of the 80s.
But can it here's the timing issue, though, that we see with this, is they're talking about 2022, next year. That's when the XFL is supposed to come back, with The Rock now partial owner of it with some other people. And they were working in concert with the CFL on something, which I didn't quite understand what was going to happen with that, how that was going to work. But they are supposed to be back in 22 as well. Is there enough room? Is there enough talent? Is there enough appetite? I mean, we see these leagues pop up fairly often. And the idea that they're going to be substantial, that there's going to be a huge audience for it, that there's going to be enough players for it to sustain it to where it's something that you can count on year in, year out, they all feel like they're short-lived. I mean, we saw the AAF. Yeah, that.
Remember, Brock was doing announcing for them, and he almost didn't get paid.
Yeah.
He didn't get a paycheck. They just shut it down. That's where, by the way, that John Wofford guy came from, who was the backup quarterback for the Rams that when they beat us in the playoffs.
I feel like there's been so many of these leagues, you know, whether you're talking about anything from Arena League to CFL to the World Football League. Remember that? That was, what, mid-70s or something? That was.
Remember there's a team in Hawaii.
Was there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just go up and down the list of leagues that popped up that were short-lived and they disappeared for almost always it's financial reasons. So I'm just wondering if is there, A, the financial wherewithal to keep these leagues afloat? Talking about the two that are supposed to pop back up next year, now the USFL and the XFL, and are there enough players to go around? And, again, just the appetite for it. Is it something people will be sitting down and watching? You know, do I watch the XFL game or do I watch the USFL game? Which one has more credibility? Which one's going to be more of a launching pad to the NFL? Are they going to be equal? Are they going to last more than 2 years?
Yeah. Well, and I thought, you know, watching the XFL, I thought they were good games. I mean, I thought there were players that looked like they could play in the NFL. And, you know, and again, you look at the USFL guys that ended up there. And at that time, it was seen as sort of this Mickey Mouse league that, oh, you know, it's not going to be any good. They got a ton of good players. They attracted a ton of good players that ended up playing in the NFL later. So, but yeah, it's just such an expensive sport, too. I mean, it's the amount of money like the Seahawks spend just to bring these guys in to do the rookie mini camp, you know, with the helmets and the jerseys and the, you know, the cleats and everything. I mean, they provide all of that, you know, and I don't know if that's going to be the same. Are you going to have to show up and, you know, maybe with your own shoes and stuff like that? I mean, I don't know where they're going to get the money to run it, but it's just a tough task going up against the NFL. But if you can make it so that the NFL is involved and it's like a farm system for them, if you will, for players, that it's hard to, you know, training for football. I mean, like Kyle Shanahan was saying, like, if you want to get good at football, you got to practice it, man. And it's hard to get, you know, you can go and throw like what Russ is doing, and that's definitely doing some good. But as far as working on your hands and feet and how to play offensive line, I mean, you really can't do it effectively unless you're playing and practicing.
It feels like what Russell's doing is great for him and receivers.
Yeah.
But just about every other position, feels like you need that contact. If you're a linebacker, how could you come up with an off-season workout similar to what he does? I mean, if you're not hitting and you're not tackling and you're not reacting to
Which you don't want to do those things because you don't want to get hurt.
Right.
Right. So you do drills. I mean, you can do part of it to answer your question. Yeah. I mean, you can do the 7-on-7 part, dropping in zones and working on your man-man coverage, but you can't do anything about the contact and filling a gap and taking on a blocker and doing all that stuff. So, yeah, that's why I say it's just a hard – it's hard to simulate football. And so if you have these guys that are, you know, keeping sharp playing in another league at a different time of the year – you know, maybe it could work into some kind of farm system that would, you know, that's the thing I think that is key for it to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm rooting for it. I'm rooting for all these leagues. I love football. The more the merrier. Maybe you see some stars develop, make their way out of these leagues into the NFL. I mean, it'd be a great story. So we'll see what happens.
More football is good, right?
And more football is always good, Dave. All right. Coming up, how will the second half of the season look when the M's are finally healthy? That's assuming that they are healthy in the second half of the season. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk with Paul Moyer, get his take on everything Seahawks. Do you think he'd be excited about the idea of Julio Jones in a Hawks uniform?
I would say yes.
Okay. All right. We'll see.
But
see what he says. We'll ask him.
Maybe he already told me that, and maybe I asked him, are you going to run the ball?
Oh.
We'll see.
Okay.
Is there any room
maybe
to run the ball?
Maybe he told you that. All right. Well, I look forward to that conversation. It's coming up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line, the 253 saying, Bob, how about watching YouTube clips of Dave Wyman play for the Seahawks from the 80s? I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. Is that just to get back in the 80s mode for the USFL?
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you can appreciate how much better the players are now.
I've seen quite a few Dave Wyman clips, I must say. He is not unfamiliar to me in terms of him playing. Those giant shoulder pads out there and the bandage on his chin and just out there wreaking havoc on the field. I'm very aware of it. All right, so we touched on this briefly, talking about Kyle Lewis. And in case you missed it, Jerry DePoto was on with Danny and Gallant today. And he was asked about Kyle Lewis and how long is he going to be out. And he didn't have a – here's – I'll play it for you, for the guys that missed it. But it's not the answer you wanted on the future of Kyle Lewis this season.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And, you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
Okay, so that's what, the second or third time we've heard that, and I've felt differently after each one. That one sounds to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but that one sounds to me like Kyle is not happy with the diagnosis that he got.
Which is why he's looking for a second opinion.
Yeah, and that, you know, he needs to be careful, and we need to be sensitive of his needs.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And hopeful that they'll see him again this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just.
Prolonged was used as well.
Brutal. So there's that for those that missed it. Mm-hmm. But so the question is, what does this team look like in the second half of the season when they are presumably healthy? And that's a big assumption. We don't know who else is going to go down between now and then, who's going to bounce back from the injuries they're currently dealing with. And we're just assuming everybody that's injured now, Evan White's going to be back, and everybody in the bullpen's going to be back, and Dunn's going to be fine. And I mean, it's just been such an onslaught of injuries, one after another. I think it's really, really risky to assume they're going to be healthy in the second half, that they're going to get, you know, whatever's going on out of their system or what. I don't know what's leading to all of this. I don't know if it's somebody sent in a text earlier saying, hey, is this just 100% bad luck, or is there something within their training that's not happening? Now, each injury is different, so it's not like everybody's coming up with the same, you know, hamstring issue. That was Fraley. He had a hamstring issue. You know, you got what feels like a chronic knee issue, or at least oft-injured knee with Kyle Lewis. completely different things. Pitchers, they got their arm issues going. So everybody's got a different thing going on. I don't know if you can point to the training staff more than you could just say, this is just beyond unfortunate and awful, awful luck at this point.
Yeah, I'm always very hesitant to point to the training staff because, you know, I've been on, you know, around the staff that really did a good job. And Jim Weitzel and John Kasich up here, and then, yeah, James Collins and the Greek, Steve Antonopoulos in Denver. Those guys were the best, and they always took good care of you. It's just bad luck sometimes. You know, you mentioned like Evan White. He still has a ton of work to do.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great glove and, you know, obviously gold glover, but he was batting 176 at the end of the year last year. And when he left after 30 games, 144. And that's why I keep talking about like this plan of Jerry's getting pushed back, you know, or pushed out into the future just because it doesn't look good. And for a guy, you know, I hope that it doesn't become this chronic thing for Kyle Lewis because he had the knee injury, you know, before. You know, and it's kind of weird because, like I said, usually, like when I came back from my right knee injury, like that was the strongest part of my body. I'd worked so hard on it. So it's weird that he is, you know, and it sounds like he maybe has a little bit of a disagreement. And I'm just, that's how it sounds to me. That's not a fact, but it sounds like, you know, he probably thinks that that there's something else going on and, you know, wants to get it checked out and take a longer time because it sounded like they had a conversation and afterwards Jerry's talking about a prolonged absence.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously rooting for the best for him, whatever the conclusion is. Hopefully he is a part of the future. It's not a chronic situation. It's a for now situation. And I guess the upside, if you want to try to find a silver lining to it, are two things. A, Tremel maybe gets a longer run, longer look at this level because they need outfielders. And B, this isn't the season of consequence. As much as we want him to win, we want him to be in contention, that was not the expectation or the plan this year. So it's not as if his absence is going to now take them out of the running where they would otherwise be, you know, battling it out with the Astros and the A's to see who's going to win the AL West. So if you're going to find a season for it to happen, okay, this feels like the one. And again, that's reaching for a silver lining in this whole thing. But to picture what this team would look like fully healthy is tough because they haven't been since day one. I mean, it started with Paxton. It started with Lewis. He didn't even start the season.
Right.
So you weren't – game one, you weren't at full strength. Game one of the season. And then Paxton shortly thereafter, 24 pitches later, he's done for the season. And then we could just go down the checklist of each guy that landed on the IL. So I don't even know what this team looks like. How much better are they? I mean, they certainly have to be better when they're fully healthy, but who knows? We haven't seen it. I have no idea what they look like. I would say they are decidedly better, but that's just guessing.
Yeah, well, and like I said, there's still some of their young guys that need the work. They need to – Evan White needs to prove that he can hit. You know, and they're still 28 and 29. I mean, what do you think this team looks like if they don't have – if they just have the normal amount of injuries? You know, like I said a few weeks ago, it was Detroit had like 5-6 guys on their IL, and the Mariners had like 13 or 14, maybe 15 at that time. So, you know, if you just have a normal – you know, what is the record? Maybe it's the record isn't necessarily any better, but – you would have probably – you'd be able to figure out a little bit more of, like, who can play, who can hit, who can't. And, you know, guys are on the IL. You can't figure anything out. So that's the part that's really frustrating. I guess nobody's more frustrated than Jerry Dipoto. You have this plan, and I'm sure he accounted for injuries along the way, but not at this level.
Yeah, it's – man, it is just brutal. Just brutal what's going on so far. All right, again, you guys can text in. Somebody says we were talking about watching you, Dave Wyman, clips on YouTube. Somebody's saying there are no YouTube Wyman clips, and that's a crime. There are Seahawks. I don't know if there's a Dave Wyman highlight reel specific to you, but
somebody made one for me, Taylor Jacobs, and I have it saved on my – on my favorite list.
We should post it on our Twitter page for.
All right. Well, I don't want people making fun of me.
Oh, stop it! And as the 206 says, number 54 needs to get on YouTube and watch Wyman highlights and take notes.
I don't.
How about that? Is that sent from your phone, Dave?
I don't think Bobby Wagner needs any advice from me.
All right. We'll see what Paul Moyer thinks. Let's see if he can locate some Wyman highlights. Paul Moyer will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.